Welcome to Law Matters. Thank you. Today I have a very old and good friend and an excellent lawyer and someone who's travelled the path of Hong Kong with me and very often closely travelled the path with me. That's Colin Cohen, a doyen of Hong Kong's legal profession, and we welcome you.
Thank you so much for those spectacular and wonderful words, Dramaphone.
Well, I wanted to make you feel at home.
I really feel at home here.
I'm pleased to hear it, Colin. And I know, by the way, that you've just come back from, I think, Australia.
Yes, indeed. I had been away for a month. I have a house in Australia. My family came with me. The family were there for about 3 weeks. And then I had a week on my own and I celebrated our mutual birthday in the Barossa Valley with some very dear friends, drinking some excellent wine with wonderful scenery. And had a magnificent time. And now I'm back in Hong Kong.
And why are you back?
Well, someone has to do a little bit of work nowadays and help the practice along and to keep a few clients happy and to deal with matters. Although while I was away, I was working like you do when you go away for a few months. We get coming up to 69, on to 70. So I really got to think to enjoy this planet we live on.
Yes, we don't know quite when we'll depart.
Well, yes, we have to be careful.
We have to live it fully.
Exactly.
And am I right? I think you went down to Brisbane.
Yes, I flew into Brisbane. I have a house on the Gold Coast, which is just down the road, about 55 minutes in, and it's near Surfers Paradise on a golf course. It's very pleasant, very nice.
It sounds lovely. And then Barossa?
Barossa is north of Adelaide in a wine-growing district. So it's a flight from Brisbane to Adelaide, 2.5 hours. Australia is a big, big country. People do not realize how big it is to travel around. And it was really very, very beautiful. We had wonderful weather in the Barossa, although we had lots of storms and rain this year up in the Gold Coast, but it was fine. We had a good time.
I'm very pleased to hear it. And in fact, I think I'm right in saying, it's true for me too, that travel now makes up a large part of your life.
Yes, for various reasons. I go back to see my family. My mother is coming. We're going to celebrate her 90th birthday this March. Unfortunately, my father passed in July. He was 93. So I do like to go back to Europe and I do like to spend time in Europe enjoying the big sporting events, which I do follow.
I was going to come on to sporting events because I rather envy your travels in relation to sport. And I think F1 is one of the top ones, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I do enjoy F1. I've been watching F1 for over 40 years. I got into F1 because my grandfather's brother was a racing driver at Brands Hatch. They took me down to Brands Hatch. And I was very, very young. And then I watched all the cars and I got into it. And then I started following Formula One. And when I came to Hong Kong, no, nothing on TV. And then the Malaysian Grand Prix started up. And then all the Grand Prix in the area, obviously Japan was there. So I followed F1 and I still follow F1. I'm a big follower of Mercedes, Lewis Hamilton, not doing as well as he was doing. But hopefully this season could be a better season.
I hope so. And let's think back to when we were a little bit younger. Because I was really keen on F1, by the way. I worshipped Graham Hill.
Ah, Jackie Stewart, Graham Hill.
Jim Clark.
They were wonderful drivers, you know. And in those days, you got in the car and would you get out of the car? Would you be alive at the end of the race? It was so dangerous with the safety and all the rest. It was very, 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 very serious accidents took place. Very dangerous sport.
I remember being at Brands Hatch once and I met Graham Hill, which was very exciting, in the paddock. In the days when security was much more relaxed.
You could charm your way in.
And I remember Jim Clark spinning off and crashing at Brands Hatch on that day. And I walked round the circuit afterwards, again, you wouldn't do it today, to see the car. And I was quite amused to see there were those gold toffees all over the track. He's been having a toffee or two, has he? That's probably why he span off.
And nowadays, Formula One is much safer and it's totally different sport than it was.
Absolutely. And cricket, I think, forms part of your life?
Yeah, I like cricket a lot and I played a little bit very badly. I played a bit in Hong Kong. I'm an MCC member, so I take advantage of Lords. One of my only connections with UK is my MCC membership and my Chelsea season ticket. I have no other assets. But cricket, I played here. I've done legal work for the Hong Kong Cricket Association. I sit on the disciplinary panels. So we have cases coming when players misbehave and we deal with that. So I enjoy cricket.
And the football club, of course.
Yes, and the Hong Kong Football Club. The first time I arrived in Hong Kong, I was a football referee. And I got into the football club because they needed referees. And I refereed the league out here. And then I became a member of the general committee. I was honorary secretary. So it's a very big part of my life, the Hong Kong Football Club.
Now, over the 35 years that you and I have known each other, our constant rivalry has not been in the law. It's been between Leeds United and Chelsea.
Absolutely. And we have the same birthday, and we are sworn enemies. Chelsea, Leeds. It goes back, the history of it goes back with our two clubs to the days when Jack Charlton, your lovely defender, says, I have that little book of people who I'm about to nobble. And they were all the Chelsea team, and especially, I always remember the game I watched, a little bit too young to go to, was the FA Cup replay. What a game. That's a game where if it was played today, the refereeing today, nobody would be left on the pitch. Now, I supported Chelsea because I'm a North London boy,
yeah,
and boy from a good Jewish community, and everyone said, well, why aren't I a Tottenham fan?
Tottenham is the Jewish club, isn't it?
Well, they say it is, but it's North London, where it's the Jewish community and all the rest as well. But when I was younger, I mean, the swinging 60s and Chelsea and the King's Road. And the fact was that I was meant to be on the Saturday afternoon at the youth clubs or at the Hebrew schools. And instead, my brother and I sort of skived off down to Chelsea, thinking we would never get caught. And then, of course, we did get caught on the way back when we were very happy singing in the street.
Such is life.
That is it. So I became a big Chelsea fan. And then when I came and met you, you were the Leeds fan.
And so in those days, we were both in the top division. Now, Leeds are going back, of course.
Yes, you're doing well this season. I think you could get promoted.
It's got a great forward line. It's entertaining.
Yeah, well, Bamford is doing well.
Yes, he's back. Now, there's a possibility that our listeners will think that all you and I do is swan around the world watching sports events. But we do actually have a career in the law, don't we?
We do. I think, yes, I mean...
Passingly. So let's talk about your career for a bit, because it's illustrious. And you've actually been a much broader practitioner than I. Got skills in all sorts of areas of the law.
Yeah, it is quite interesting. When I did my trainee contract in London with a very good firm, Eric Levine, Jimmy Goldsmith's solicitor, a little bit of litigation, but a lot of it was commercial corporate, whereby I was involved visiting my traineeship and then I qualified, and with a lot of commercial corporate law dealing with listings, and I was involved in quite a few listings and IPOs, etc.
Yes.
I learned my trade and that's the area I was involved in. And then what happened was, you're going to ask me why, what brought me to Hong Kong. It's very interesting because I was in London working at Eric Levine. I was told that Eric was going to go off to the US and the firm was going to restructure. And I saw an advert in the Times, big advert, saying £40,000 a year, Hong Kong solicitors, etc. Applied for the job, got interviewed by a lovely man called David Pyatt. Now, you might know him.
I remember the name.
He was an ex-partner of Freshfields, and he was involved with a firm called David Ling & Co., and he was recruiting. I got recruited, not, of course, with £40,000 a year. I had a job offer from Herbert Smith at £5,000 a year, and it was, let's say, three times as much money as that. So I thought to myself, well, come out to Hong Kong. The day you get off the aeroplane, no immigration. We got admitted very, very quickly. And the job I was meant to be doing when I came over here was working and doing commercial corporate stuff as well with him. Came here, I didn't do any real due diligence on the firm, just came out and started working.
Yes.
And that's what brought me to Hong Kong. And then the firm and I didn't fit that well together. And so I moved into a litigation firm, Robertson Double and Bowes.
Yes.
And then I got involved, got recruited at the Hong Kong University. And at the same time, I was allowed to practice a bit. And then I developed more into commercial corporate crime, litigation, and still doing a bit of commercial.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And I say this in a complimentary way. You're a jack of all trades, and it's now a rarity. Jeff Booth in my firm, Haldane's, is the same, but it's a rarity. You have to be very clever, Colin.
You've got to know your stuff. I even do matrimonial law, and Sharon Sir, who we all know is a doyen of matrimonial law, you know, whenever I meet her, I always introduce her to all my friends as to my late wife's lawyer, just in case I got into trouble. But she said, Colin, you dabble occasionally in family law, but you know what you're doing. So I still do a little bit, but I don't like to get involved.
Yes.
You know, I like to do the area of law, which I can really feel very comfortable with.
Well, I think that's wise, and certainly it's paid me off to remain away from anything that's too clever. And before we talk about some cases, because you had some very notable cases, because I think listeners always enjoy people that are a long time in Hong Kong, come from either Australia, New Zealand, our case, England. Reflecting back, there's a nostalgic bit in all of us. And certainly when we spoke and when I was on your podcast and you kindly invited me, we reflected for a moment on Hong Kong when we first arrived. Paint a picture.
Well, it was interesting. Arriving in Hong Kong, even getting here was a unique experience. British Airways, first stop Rome, second stop Bombay, and then landing in Kai Tak Airport on August the 22nd, 1981, with steaming heat and all the rest. That in itself and all the different smells of people and the buzzing and all the rest. It was a complete, total eye-opener, something so totally different, whereby you met, they put you up in a small flat in Kowloon Tong, where I stayed with someone. And then you meet people, you get into the whole atmosphere of Hong Kong. You do things and just going out, meeting people, and it's totally, totally different, you know. And then the ability of the Far East, your first time here. And then I thought I'd be here for 2 years, and like the bug got us. And then every 43 years later, this is my home.
Yes. Yes.
And I mean, the early days in here were quite interesting because everyone was talking about the handover, but at that stage, it was run as a colony. There were very few lawyers at that stage in the law society. There weren't many law firms, and the work I was doing was very interesting. I was doing cases when I started working, doing a bit of criminal work, which I had not much experience. I was running around some courts, and my first big case was doing a case defending a helper accused of poisoning the baby in the magistrate's court.
Yes.
And did it all on my own, got it gloriously acquitted. Only because of the incompetence of the prosecution.
Which is often the way.
But you got cases here which were so unusual and so different and were a huge international flavor. And it was a massive and it still is. Everyone asks me this question, has Hong Kong changed? And I look at them and I say, well, where do you live? London. Has London changed? Everything changes.
Of course, of course.
But those were the good days when we were here, especially when I was single for 7 years. I can tell you those were very good days.
For bachelors in Hong Kong, in my case, in the late 70s through to the 80s, which year did you arrive?
81.
81, so just marginally, 2 or 3 years
yes,
later. Yeah.
And I met you very shortly after I arrived.
It was tremendous.
Yeah.
And then we used to go water skiing at the Saturdays and Sundays and partying at night.
It really was. We were burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah. I think we better move away from this. I can see there's going to be some confessions in a moment.
Well, nothing wrong with slightly proper confessions.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And then actually, before I was going to talk to you about Kissel, and I will, but we've talked about London a bit. What's your feeling about London? And we've experienced Brexit, which to me is anathema for you.
I was at the Euros. It was incredible. A lot of people didn't bother to vote and people thought, well, we're really going to go. I can't understand it. And now we're facing the reality of the difficulties. You go to Europe, getting around Europe. Now you've got to get a special visa. It's a real pain in the neck.
Yes.
And it's inexplicable. I can't understand it, but it is what it is. You go back to London. I like London for 2-3 weeks. Obviously, I like it. My family, my brother, I see all my friends. I like to go and watch my beloved Chelsea play, go and watch a bit of cricket, try to avoid the winters. I was speaking to my mother and my friend saying it's -4 or -5 and horribly cold and very slippery. No, not there to live there, but I like to go back.
Would you ever contemplate living there, retiring
no,
there?
No. Never, 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 never. The place I am going to retire is here in Hong Kong. I have my certain red lines, which would make me think again. But at the moment now, this city works. I enjoy it. I have all my friends here. My family are here. My grandson is here. He's at school here. So I have all my roots are here.
And we live in a troubled world. And in some ways, this is a bubble.
In a way, yes. Hong Kong is a very, very safe place.
Yes.
I was reading the newspapers about these gangs. You wear a nice watch in London. They follow you around and chop your hand off to get your watch.
It's an unattractive thought.
Yeah. Certain areas, you just can't go out at night. And it's the same in Paris when I was there and the same in Rome. You have to watch where you're going. But here in Hong Kong, you can go anywhere.
It's a safe city. Let's talk about Kissel then.
Yes. Well, I've been very lucky in many cases. I was doing a lot of complex commercial crime. I was doing lots of work. I had a reputation on criminal law. I got involved in the Kissel case after two trials. The first trial, she was represented by another law firm. And she got convicted and then went to the Court of Final Appeal. And the Court of Final Appeal, due to some major deficiencies in the trial, ordered a retrial. And then I was asked to take over and acted for her in the retrial in respect to that matter. We're very fortunate that we were able to persuade the King's Counsel from London to come over and got admitted to do the case. And a lot of people asked me, well, how could all that be financed? That was quite simple. We got a cost order. Said there were some costs available to deal with it.
And, who was the counsel?
Ed Fitzgerald, a very dear friend of mine.
Yes.
And Derek Chan, who is now very well-known senior counsel.
Excellent.
And then it was prosecuted. Previously, it was prosecuted in the first trial by Peter Chapman. But for the retrial, they brought in a King's Counsel from London, David Perry. And David Perry got admitted to do it. And Anna Lai was his junior, and she's now a High Court judge. It was an interesting trial because it was a retrial. And you've got to remember, retrials are very, very difficult because you've got to live with what was said in the previous trial, statements and matters. But it was totally done on a different matter. We defended, and this was for your listeners, people are very familiar. It was her husband. We had two brothers, Robert Kissel. Both of them got murdered, one in the US and one here. He was bludgeoned. Robert was bludgeoned by her, had a milkshake, and called the milkshake murder. A lot of publicity. And the real issue here, we ran the case, was on provocation, abuse, psychological issues as well. Put her story, gave her evidence, but in the end of the day, the jury did not find it in her favor and got convicted. Went on appeal dismissed, went to the Court of Appeal, Court of Final Appeal, leave wasn't granted. Although one interesting area which we did deal with is that people may be interested in this, and it's an interesting area of law. Here in Hong Kong, when you are convicted of murder, it is life imprisonment. Now, in the UK and other areas, what they do, they give you a term whereby it will be a situation where a judge will look at everything and the judge will say, oh, this deserves 25 years, 30 years. And sometimes a judge will say, let's say in the double murders and all the rest, well, you have full life. Now, here in Hong Kong, what you have to deal with is what's called the Long-Term Supervision Board. And the Long-Term Supervision Board is a board you go to each year and will decide, well, we think you've done enough. And then at the end of that term, are you a safe person to be back into society? What happened here was the board did not think she'd done sufficient time. They wouldn't say what is the sufficient time. It did a judicial review based on that. But again, the way in which the law is here in Hong Kong, we didn't succeed on that. So she's still locked up in prison. Normally for these type of cases, when you get to a 20 to 25 years, at that time, they do think about considering whether you're free to be released, then she'll be deported back to the US.
Yes.
Although she could have had the opportunity to serve her time in the USA, but decided against that because she was told by a visiting judge that if you come back to the USA, you have to follow the USA term and you will not be considered for parole until your age 80 or 70.
So it's a worse option.
Oh, US has much tougher sentencing.
Yes. And probably, I think, rather less attractive prisons.
Correct. The prisons here, they're well run, they're safe. All prisons have issues. But yes, you're correct. I think they're a lot safer, especially when I was doing a big extradition case, the Osman case, when I went to see him in London. First of all, in Pentonville and then to Brixton. They were not very nice places.
No, I agree with you. Now, I was going to ask you a bit about how one in this day and age actually attracts clients. Because if I go back to 10 years ago, 15 years ago, frankly, we did it on word of mouth and reputation alone. And now you use social media. We do. And you've also got Ali Law.
Correct.
And I heard your podcast with Ramesh.
Yes.
Which I thought was excellent.
Thank you.
And I think Ali Law has been a good association for you.
We're a small firm worldwide, but by Hong Kong standards, like your firm, we're medium to large, so we're well known. So in the past, you got your work through reputation. You know, quite honestly, I got cases from your firm when your firm was conflicted in criminal law and vice versa. I get a lot of my work from a big London law firm, the big firms here, because of conflicts, and you get work from that as well. But you're right, with social media now, with using what the youngsters want, they want to think, oh, I want to look you up. I want to know all about you. I want to know who you are. I want to know your background. I want to know how you're thinking. So LinkedIn, Facebook, newsletters, and the Ali Law thing is really very good because being a small firm, we're not capable of having offices worldwide. So a good referral network with good firms in other jurisdictions does result in referrals and business and helps us out. And we have exclusivity for Hong Kong. And the firm in London is a good firm, Edwin Coe. Now, I don't have to instruct Edwin Coe in London, but I do. And it has worked out. But you're quite right. Getting business nowadays, I'll tell you something. In the good days, when I first started off, clients were really nice people. Clients were very, very respectable and all the rest. Nowadays, the younger generation are all coming up, and it's much more difficult. They will have a go at the lawyers. I don't know whether you've had this, but under legal aid cases at the moment, the drug cases, the clients just turn on you very, very easily. You have to go and see a person in the prison who's misbehaved badly. You do your very best and they accept it. Nowadays, you're dealing with drug cases. They will find that you didn't tell me this, you didn't say this, you didn't tell me had I pleaded guilty, I'll get one third off, as opposed to now I'm serving 25 years. It's changed, but maybe to the good.
you have to deal with it.
Exactly.
And in the old days, there were a lot of conferences abroad. Do you still follow legal conferences abroad?
Yeah, yes. I still go to Ali Law. We have conferences as well. And I go to the Asia Law ones as well. Because again, you meet people. I mean, to the US a lot. I used to get a lot of conferences in the big conference. I sit on boards for the Law Society Indemnity Fund. And I used to go to Chicago for a big conference run by Aon to meet the lawyers there. A, to improve my own skills, and B, to try to drum up a little bit of business.
And to see different places around the world in a business context.
To do that.
Now, you've talked about the changing face of clients, the changing dynamic. One of the things that I've been interested in recently is the fee structure.
Yeah.
Because we're obviously restricted in some ways. The Law Society doesn't allow us to have contingency fees, for example. But is there an argument, do you think, for a new look type of arrangement with clients? Time costs, we've had them for hundreds of years, haven't we?
Yeah. Nowadays, the client says, how much is this going to cost me? I've only got so much. I've got a budget. And I know, even in criminal cases, the uncertainty of the case. But nowadays, in criminal areas, there's no chance of getting any form of contingency fee. In the UK, you used to get very good legal aid, but that's all stopped now. So with personal injury cases, because of the nature of Hong Kong and the problems with clerks, ambulance chasers, and everyone getting their fingers in a pie, conditional fees or working on a contingency fee, it's illegal here and always has been. Although there's been talk about reforming it, there has been reforms in arbitration, whereby conditional fee agreements in arbitration agreements are allowed. Is Hong Kong, is the profession able to be strong enough to get into the contingency fees? And of course, the big issue in the UK with contingency fees is litigation funders come in. There's a huge industry in funding the litigation. Hong Kong hasn't gone that far yet. People are talking about it. But in the UK, the experience I've had acting for Hong Kong companies who were involved in London, especially a mining case, there was a listed company doing mining in, I think it was in Colombia, and then the workers were treated very badly. So they issued a funding agreement in London to sue the company for mistreatment of workers, et cetera, et cetera. And that was all funded.
Yes. So you're in favor of?
What worries me is the way in which they've still got lots of clerks and people. And let's look what's happening in the conveyancing industry with kickbacks and all the rest.
Does it still occur?
I think it does, yeah. Am I in favor? I think it's time to review it, and I think it could be a more, is it in the client's best interest? Is it best to get proper litigation funding in certain cases under strict conditions as to the full amount? And possibly, yes. But at the moment now, for civil cases, you have a reasonably good legal aid.
Yes. So looking back again, regrets, professional particularly, have you got regrets? If you were rewriting the book, would you rewrite any chapter?
I think there's always things you regret a little bit. I worked, like you did, nonstop in the early years. Really, had I taken some time off earlier, I don't have any real regrets. I think what I'm really happy with is that in my firm and in your firm, I got so many good young lawyers who are working their way out. And all I would like to see is that I turn 69, you're 70, I'll be 70 soon, is where do we go? I like to sit back and let the younger lawyers take over, bring in the business if they can do that. I feel that perhaps I should have got more culture. I would go to more museums, have time off and to appreciate this world we live in. Perhaps I've not done too much of that, especially spending too much on the sporting arena, watching World Cups, Rugby World Cups and all the rest. But no, I don't have too many regrets. Perhaps I would have preferred to do a little bit more community service. I did a lot because I was on the Inland Revenue Review Board deputy chairman. I even got a gong for that, a Medal of Honor. That is something right.
I didn't know that.
A lot of people put MH against their names. I don't a little bit of that. But that was quite nice of them to give me that. I remember going and CY Long presenting that to me at Government House. I feel good about that. And I'm still doing a lot of examining work because I sort of lecture law at the University of Hong Kong and I still am an honorary lecturer. And I give occasional lectures. I'm an external examiner. So I got lots of other interests to keep the mind going doing that.
Excellent. Very good. Very few regrets. And optimistic for the future.
Look, there's that big elephant in the room. What's happening at the moment now, we have some trials going on in the courts. There's one which has finished. And when you have a criminal case, when it finishes, the jury returns a verdict pretty quickly. In the case which was heard last year concerning the 47, when will the verdict is due to be handed down in a few months' time? I'm keen to see how the three judges in the national security law reason their judgments and reason the sentencing as well. We have the Jimmy Lai case going on at the moment, which is interesting as well. And I think you have to be a bit careful. You get press reporting, but sometimes the press reporting just put highlights. Don't read everything about that. So the problem which we're facing here is that here in Hong Kong is a safe place. I go to Australia and I get this question all the time. Colin, I always used to transit through Hong Kong on my way to London, but is it safe for me to do so? And I'm astounded by that sort of comment. I said, of course it's safe. What's this national security law? I said, well, you're not attempting to upset the Hong Kong government, are you? Of course it's safe. And people don't realize that if you look in England, they changed the law recently, and the national security law, the provisions of the Treason Act, are really tough as well. Very serious issues in respect to that. So I'm optimistic for Hong Kong, but sometimes, as I keep on saying to you, I saw the Secretary for Justice at a recent pro bono award session. I said, look, sometimes the Hong Kong government does score some own goals. Now, own goals are fine because you can always win the game on a football pitch. But it is the sort of perceptions that got to be educated that where Hong Kong is positioning ourselves.
The optics aren't always that good, but the underlying situation is rather better than the optics.
Well, yes, I think so. As I said, it's still a very safe place. Everyone asks me, they say, well, what's your red lines? I say, well, I've got very simple red lines. And it's a very, very simple red lines I have. As long as I can read my Economist magazine hard copy here, as long as I can buy my Financial Times, the Weekend Financial Times, excellent newspaper, hard copy, as long as my internet is reasonably free. I don't care about rubbish sites being free, but I get reasonable access to the internet.
International.
Yeah, international. And I'm very happy with all of that. And I think those things are fundamental. And of course, the rule of law, which, can you get a fair trial? Yes, you can. I believe so. I think what's happening now, a lot of the arbitration is moving into Singapore. I don't know why, because I think Hong Kong Arbitration Center does work very well. There's some very good arbitrators here. I believe the courts, like everything, they got some good judges. But again, there's many deputy judges. You got the district courts, the magistrates. Sometimes the judges and the magistrates were not, as in our early days, the magistrates were really very focused. There may be issues there. Make sure you have standards. And are those the same standards that are really needed? And I know the Chief Justice and all the rest wants to ensure that is done. I think that's very, very important. But I do feel it's working. I do feel it's working. Look at other legal systems as well. I think one difficulty we have here in Hong Kong is a delay getting into court between cases, both in the criminal area and the civil. You know that, and I know that, yeah. Which is difficult as well. I was interested in seeing the live broadcasting. Now, everyone asked me, isn't this great? I said, well, I turned into it, and even for me, it was very boring. Listening to Benjamin Yu talk about some issues on the interpretation of a lease and the previous case regarding disclosure for legal aid. It's good to have it, but the main area to have see the courts is reasons for sentencing. And they were watched when someone's imposing the number of years you're going to serve for the murder and whether you're going to be kept in prison for the rest of your life, and the judge sets out all the reasons. That was quite interesting, and I watched that on Sky. It's improving. Things are improving all the time.
Things are improving. Colin, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been a great pleasure.
And it's been really great chatting with you. And thank you very much for inviting me.
Let's hope we have many more years.
I hope so. Thank you.
Thank you.